to Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, man, you're in the loop. Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula, have been hanging out with you all day on this Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday after the Texans fall 34-7 to the Vikings in Minnesota at US Bank Stadium. A real disappointing one with all the damn penalties and the missed field goal that kind of put you in a place where you didn't get anything out of your first couple of drives, turnovers, just a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, which is something that you've heard multiple weeks, every week thus far this season for the Texans. But it feels even worse because that not cleaning up your stuff compounds week over week. And it also, when you get against a team that's capable of capitalizing, it puts you in a place where you have to walk up to people and tell them the Texans lost 34-7. It's not a fun place to be. But in the course of this game, one of the things that I harped on was my Vikings defense. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you brought up, Justin Jefferson over there, right? And Justin Jefferson, I think, might have exposed something of a weakness in this Texans defense. Now, I know someone also texted in and said the Vikings loss exposed that we fans, local media, national media were too soon to jump on the Texans being Super Bowl contenders. And that's fair. But I want to get a little bit more granular, if you'll allow me. One of the things that we kind of bounced back and forth about,
Brett Favre goes,
was the possibility. I was like, why did Brett Favre come up here? We ain't talking about welfare funds or nothing. Was the idea of, hey man, Stingley following DJ Moore opened some things up. Is that something that they'll utilize? And they did not here. They didn't move him around. They went with kind of the more you know, base kind of zone oftentimes and sending four, right? Because I imagine if you're going to blitz, you probably need to play man behind that. And some of that is because Justin Jefferson, in addition to being one of, if not the best wide receivers in the league, is not one of those dudes that's stuck on the outside. He's not an ex in that he's just going to be there. They'll move him around, and they did move him around in this game, right? It's one of the reasons why you end up with Azeez Al-Shaair covering him at some point. It's one of the reasons why Eric Murray has to account for him a couple times in the end zone, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're able to move him around in order to get the advantages because of the defense that the Texans are playing. And I mentioned that I watched this game here in the studios. You know, obviously, Sean,
with
Seth,
the fellas,
you had Clint, all these fine folks here. And I love it because they're talking about things. And one of the things that was asked or brought up was the possibility that the defense was as it was because of a lack of a true nickel slot corner guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think you're moving Derek Stingley into that slot just because Justin Jefferson is there following him in that way.
Yeah.
You would need somebody that's a true cover guy in that way. And I don't mean to poo-poo Jalen Petrie, but Jalen Petrie, really, what he's brought are like the linebacker-type things that, that he brought down, right? Playing close to the line and bring that physicality and those types of things. He's not a true like cover guy.
No, and he hasn't been at all. Go ahead.
And so if you were going to play man, you would have to feel comfortable with the idea that somebody in that slot maybe has an opportunity to cover up and man up with Justin Jefferson. And I feel like not having that maybe leaves open the opportunity for other teams to see that and go, if we have a guy that we can move into the slot and create havoc, the Texans might not have a good answer for that.
So you're 100% right on that. I think that's exactly what they did. And you have to give a lot of credit to Kevin O'Connell. Like this is what they're showing. This is what they're doing. How do we exploit that? But it leads me to believe, but the Texans defense is not totally off the hook here. In fact, they're not off the hook at all.
Okay.
Because what have we been talking about since the offseason and training camp and free agency and everything else? I just haven't liked, or I shouldn't say I haven't liked, but I've always thought they could bolster the safety room. You know, we've talked about that a lot. We wondered about Jalen Petrie, you know, maybe has he found a home? And you just touched on it. He's found a home and made some big plays, frankly, as the tackler, as the line of scrimmage guy. But the Vikings are over there going, rubbing their hands together, saying, all right, you want to be a tackler? Can you cover?
And he you know? I mean, in the ways that, like, in some of the zone situations and having to, you know, get out there on some of these outbreaking routes, some of those things when he's kind of the cloud cornerbacks at times or whatever. Like, he's been able to do that. But Justin Jefferson presents a different possibility. Now we're talking about the idea of an elite wide receiver. And I understand someone might go, well, how many elite wide receivers are you going to see? Like, how many elite wide receivers do you have to contend with? And just in a general NFL perspective, that's a fair thing to bring up. But the Texans, again, if we're talking about them as potential Super Bowl contenders or even just dudes that are going to play in high profile situations, right? You might not see one of those for a little bit, right? But you have the likes of Garrett Wilson and the Jets are on your schedule, mm-hmm. right? Depending on how you feel about Amon-Ra St. Brown, but he's a slot guy just in general.
Oh, he right? is. He's a big-time receiver.
He's on your schedule. Yeah. CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys are on your schedule. I mean, Tyreek Hill is a different dude in general, but mm-hmm. like those guys, the Dolphins are on your schedule. The Chiefs, I don't know if I necessarily see it that way, but if there's somebody that knows how to get a guy into the right place and attack you, Andy Reid and the Chiefs on your schedule. Zay Flowers. Mm-hmm. And the Ravens on your schedule. That's just regular season before we talk about the aspirations that you have in the postseason. I think that this could be something that Matt Burke, D'Amico Ryans are going to have to really find some level of answer for is yeah. if people are putting guys into that slot, do you have an answer for them, especially high-profile guys, other than just we're going to have whoever covers them, like just the assignment, and we just have to play better because but that falls away from what this team has done really good, which is putting your players in the best chances to succeed.
Yeah, and then there's the other side of it from the Texans' defensive perspective. You know, maybe it's just a personnel thing, but you got Eric Murray ending up, no matter what credit you give the Vikings and their offense for setting up that play, you end up with Eric Murray covering him in the red zone. You end up with Al-Shaair, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
Like there is a defensive aspect of this, you know, as much as anything. You give him credit, but then you have the soft coverage, which was 50% of the time.
Yeah, and that was another element of it.
50%, literally. I mean, that's what the football database, you know, watched the game and or the film and came up with. 50% of the time, they're giving him a 5-yard cushion or more.
Yeah.
Well, that's not scheming up anything. That's the defense looking for an answer.
Yeah. And yeah, you need to be able to like mm-hmm. find something. I mean, Charles Davis was mentioned that on the broadcast. Even if you're not going to have somebody isolated on him, giving him the free release with the level of talent that he has who clearly presented a problem. And I think just generally, if you are in those zones, if you're in those circumstances, someone like Kevin O'Connell, and this is where mm-hmm. I tip my hat to him, is capable of scheming up a situation where I see your rules and I'm going to bend those rules against you to hurt mm-hmm. yourself, right? And I appreciate the 281 mention out, hey man, middle linebacker helping Murray and Wall Jefferson from going inside, he's going to cover him at time. But again, like I understand how you get there. The problem is that you're in that circumstance where now
yeah.
it's I mean, look, and I understand you're going to ask a dude to just get out there and play the best no matter what the circumstance. But I think it's a little unfair to have situations where you're going to have Azeez Al-Shaair be responsible for Justin Jefferson. You want to limit those as much as possible, especially if you have a player that fits a little bit more the capability of doing that role. And the problem is, I think you do not have an option there because you don't have, it doesn't feel like you have a guy that can play that slot corner in the particular way that would be necessary for a player of the caliber of Justin Jefferson who yeah. can move into that slot.
And then you're talking about, okay, so how do we help that? Well, we help them by doing what they did against the Bears and Caleb Williams, you know, with incredible pressure, with blitzing. Well, you're not going to blitz because then you go into the man. I mean, you could, but then you have to trust your cornerbacks a lot more. You know, if you're blitzing. And then the other thing you can do is, you know, when you're pressuring them with just the four, you have to arrive. You have to get there. I said this earlier. I think it was kind of an empty stat. You see that the Texans had four sacks and you're like, all right, pretty cool. That was very empty. Sam Darnold was never rattled. You know, he never looked off his game or whatever. And that's what the pressure's supposed to do, which helps the secondary. And I just never saw that.
There were some instances where he had opportunities, I mean, to do kind of dumb things. But mm-hmm. again, he had a lot more
yeah.
where you have Justin Jefferson running wide open against the defense because, you know, they're capable of manipulating what the defense is doing and because you don't have that particular, you know, player on him. And mm-hmm. look, I don't want to be too harsh here because, again, we're talking about Justin Jefferson. We're talking yeah. about a very, very good wide receiver, right? Good wide receivers, good players in any sport are going to get their opportunities at times. I don't expect you to necessarily stonewall them. But I think that he was able to get his rocks off to a different degree because of that particular situation with the slot. And again, I don't mean this to hate on Jalen Petrie, but because of the type of player he is, I think that it put the Texas defense, at least in this circumstance, in a place where once Kevin O'Connell noticed we could get JJ open in the slot, we can maneuver mm-hmm. him around and really get advantageous looks, then it was on
and
pop.
And you don't have to be Justin Jefferson to see what O'Connell did to exploit that defense. So, you know, you mentioned all the good receivers and great receivers that the Texans are going to face down the road. Hey, an average receiver and an average offensive coordinator is going to see how that was exploited. How did they end up with that coverage? You know, and they're going to try to keep doing it. And then it becomes, sorry to bring this up again, because I thought we were past this after last year. You know, is Jalen Petrie going to be able to do that job? You know, do that job in the slot when it's clear that his pass coverage skills are what they're exploiting.
Somebody said, fellas, maybe I missed it. Why hasn't it been pointed out that Jimmy Ward gave up another touchdown? Well, yeah, Justin Simmons is out there making plays for the Falcons. Just ask. Yeah, that particular day of back and forth did not really feel great.
Didn't go the Texans' way, did it?
No. although, are we talking about the particular play that Jimmy Ward almost knocks out, but just the hands are a little bit slow in the back of the end zone? Because I don't know how much I'm going to get too mad. Like, look, man, you would love for the hands to be there at the exact right moment. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm a little too soft on defensive backs, but I know that job is impossible as a defensive back. And so he was in the right place, back, you know, left arm, right, wrapped around the defender or around the wide receiver, you know, right arm, which is kind of front arm, trying to swat at the ball and knock it out. Just did not quite get that. I'm not going to be all that harsh on Jimmy Ward in that particular circumstance because I don't know how much I can put on him in that way, as opposed to just, you know, I feel like the defense needs to be all together, or just the defense had a particular weakness that it seemed like the Vikings and their play caller took great advantage.
Well, and then there's just one more thing that really stood out to me with the defense. And we've mentioned how at halftime the Texans were getting destroyed, but only down 14-0. They gave up 20 points in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, you see what you're talking about. You see what I'm talking about. You're an NFL head coach. You're an NFL defensive coordinator, and it just gets worse.
Yeah, and I mean, they were out there a good amount. There was times there was times, and I mean, this is mentioned on the YouTube, so I appreciate you saying that. There were times where it did look like it was starting to wear on them. They were on the field a good amount, and then probably gassed at some certain intervals. Like, again, I don't know how much of an excuse you can make in that way, but it is something that is worth considering within the course of it. But I did just want to bring up that facet. Like, is this something that we're going to have to watch? And is this something that, again, that Jalen Petrie is going to be up to the task of in some ways? Because he is your main, if not only, option when it comes to, like, being, you know, that net nickel kind of corner situation. If circumstances arise, is that going to continue to try to be the answer? Is it you're just going to kind of zone it up and match up in that way? Because at least when it came to Justin Jefferson and Kevin O'Connell, the play caller for the Vikings, they were able to eat that up. They ate your lunch.
Well, he's not your only option. I mean, you've got Desmond King on the practice squad. You got who's played that position and played it okay. And I'm not saying, like I did with Tunsil, you need to bench him. I'm just saying these are things you have to start to consider is how you're going to respond to this.
All right. Like, I guess, look, the way that Desmond King has been kind of bounced around, you wonder if that is even a tangible option for them. But I guess you have to consider that in those particular circumstances. But again, if you're talking about Desmond King, what we're talking about
More of a cover guy.
What we're talking about is not just any wide receivers. It's like when up against these high level ones, and then that becomes a whole different issue. Again, it'll be worth noting as they continue, but that definitely seemed like a particular weakness in this Texas defense that Justin Jefferson, one of the best wide receivers in the league, helped expose in a 34-7 victory from the Vikings over these Texans. I found that to be an interesting thing that brought up, and someone keeps bringing up that Tunsil had a whole bunch of penalties. Yes. Yes. Do you have any? Are you done with the Tunsil thing? Or have you emptied the?
God, no.
There's still more.
Okay.
I was like, I thought about this. I was like, have you exercised, or have you gotten some level of catharsis with the Tunsil thing?
No. No, not at all. We can revisit this. There's going to be different angles. I'm really interested. By the way, D'Amico Ryans is speaking at 2:30.
That is true
today,
and I'm sure that the drive has you covered. So make sure you keep it locked to your Sports Radio 610.
Part of me is like a little surprised, but that more people aren't pushing back on the whole, well, you gotta bench him. You have to send a message to the thing, which I'm not trying to do this for show, man. You know me. Figgy definitely knows me over the years. I don't say something on the air that I don't really, really believe. Like I really believe like leading the league in penalties, leading the league in dead ball, you know, pre-snap penalties.
Yeah.
Being the third most penalized team in the entire NFL because of Laremy Tunsil, being a captain, being a guy that is the highest paid player on the team. I don't want to hear about, hey, we all got to take responsibility, even though they mentioned my name. No, no, you're getting paid a lot.
And that's kind of antithetical to what it seems like this Texas team, as a whole has kind of done. I don't know that anybody's been like, all right, I'll take it because of me, but everybody else. A lot of guys have been like, I'll hold this. Like, I'll hold this myself.
That's We've on seen me. That from I'll take Jimmy responsibility. Ward,
obviously, the head coach, D'Amico Ryan, CJ, and it's like, hey, man, we all need to be better, but that it ultimately stops with me, right?
Your captain said, I'll take responsibility, but it's really not all my fault.
Yeah, and that feels, and maybe it's just, hey, man, he did it out of order, and that made it sound a lot worse, and maybe it's also just, hey, man, this issue keeps happening with you, right?
And then he also mentioned about, like, oh, you know, they were calling it one way earlier in the year and not this way. You know what they worked on? Training camp. They worked on this in training camp. And Laremy Tunsil
having dudes run laps.
He doesn't do training camp. You know, go to practice, man. I mean, go to practice.
That does feel like one of the adjustments that probably can be made fairly easily. The idea of, hey, man, no more veteran days, man. Mm-hmm. Like, especially for him, I don't know. Sometimes a player can have the veteran days because as a preventative measure, right? As an attempt to keep away injuries. That doesn't seem like that's the issue here with Laremy Tunsil. If that's not the case, get out here and practice, dog. Like, clearly there are finer details that you are not executing up to snuff. And so get more reps in to make sure that you get yourself executing the finer details up to snuff. Understanding that, hey, man, I know that Titus Howard's out here, especially with the illegal formation lining up off the ball or what have you. Well, you know, the refs aren't consistent with it. Well, the refs have never been consistent with hardly anything in this league.
Last thing on this. You know, we've had very high-paid quarterbacks in the NFL have a horrible first three games and get benched. And I was saying earlier, like, why can't you do that with the highest-paid player on your team who happens to be a left tackle? And you know what the excuse is? I mean, what the reasoning is, a lot of coaches say, is like, well, we just want him to stand on the sideline and kind of watch and reabsorb everything and try to get a good gauge on things again. You can do that with Laremy Tunsil too. You can do that with him. Like, if you're gonna bench a $25 million a year quarterback, you can certainly do it with a left tackle when he's that bad.
Points well taken. I guess maybe this is more of a problem if this does end up to be the case. But I do wonder, is there a possibility for that to backfire on you and you to not get the right perspective change that you're looking for?
Well, then that's on him. Then you got the answer.
Yeah, fair enough. It's In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Thanks for hanging out with us. We did mention D'Amico Ryan speaks to the media at 2:30, and you know that you're going to hear that when you keep it locked here on Sports Radio 610 because Clinton Ron got you covered with The Drive. But we're getting right about to that time where I got to turn it over to my man Figgy for the Figgy's mixtape. Fig, what you got for us?
Man, so we was just talking about speaking to Laremy Tunsil. So Andre Ware was pretty upset with this call, and we played it earlier, but I actually got the full clip. He had a couple other things towards the end that just had me cracking up. And plus, in honor of that, I'm going to go through some of the angriest announcers going off during the games.
Oh, now we're
which
talking.
Which is kind of having me cracking
up. All right, let's listen to some angry announcers next.
Pass the aux cord and crank up the volume. Figgy Figs in the driver's seat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. It's time for Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610.
Yes, it is Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610 on this Reaction Monday. And I was listening to the game. If you ain't hear me earlier, I was listening to the game on the Odyssey app, as you should. I feel like Mark Vandermeer and Andre Ware are super entertaining. And this one kind of had the internet going nuts because I felt like I was the only one talking about it at the time. And so I had to hit my man Chris Santiago up to get this highlight because I'm at home. I ain't had time to get this audio. I'm like, hey, please send me that because he was doing the highlights.
Yeah.
And he ended up sending it to me.
And then you were an influencer. You got people looking in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm like, I got to post this. So it pretty much went nuts. Like, I think ML, is that ML Football?
Football posted it. Yeah.
Oh, one of them aggregators got you?
Yeah.
He said Figgy Fig. Courtesy of Figgy Fig.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. So the clip I posted was just kind of the shorter clip.
Mm-hmm.
They actually left a couple words off what Andre Ware said. So we've been playing.
But you can't say that on the radio.
Really?
Oh, never mind. You meant different words. My bad.
Yeah. So this was actually the full clip, and a lot of people were upset, and people were asking like, "Dang, I know he had to go off on the other couple starts." Mm-hmm. I think he explained why, and this kind of why it makes sense. I guess in the other audios, mm-hmm. he didn't really care about Tunsil going off.
Here's the give, and they blow the play dead. Looks like a false start on the Texans. Let's find out who.
Before the snap, false start. Offense, number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first down.
He got it out of the way early. Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week, though. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
So that was the first part.
Hold on. Can we isolate? Because it sounded like he's about to start the grind to beat. I need that. It does sound like he threw his pen down.
Yeah. He threw something or either hit his.
I don't think it was a palm because, yeah. I mean, Andre Ware, like, he played football. Yeah, he was a quarterback.
Yeah, he threw something.
He got a big enough hand. I feel like that was a pen going straight into the deck.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounded like. But this is the other part of that clip that wasn't played.
Back to the 15 we go. 8:28 to go, first quarter. Texans down 7-0, driving.
Honestly, I don't know why I get upset about it anymore. I should have come to expect it.
Stroud in the gun.
So I think that's his. I think that's why he wasn't really upset in the other clips.
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
God bless Andre Ware.
Man, he went through all of the stages.
Yeah, he did.
He went through all his. He just acceptance.
Honestly, I don't know why I get upset about it.
He got there.
I should have come to expect it.
He got there.
Stroud in the gun.
That's right.
And
yeah.
Vandermeer's like, anywho,
just keep it moving. Man.
Anywho,
yeah.
He like, hey buddy, I'm in that building with him every day.
Right.
I don't need that smoke.
Oh man, shout out to Andre Ware, man.
He's the best when he has it. When he throws it, and when it's good too, he does the.
Yeah,
you know, loud clap and everything. So he's a fan, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. But just hearing how angry he was, I had to do a little research on all the angry calls that we hear, because a lot of the times these guys are, I don't want to say he's not professional, but sometimes people stay super buttoned up whenever they, you know, mistakes happen and stuff like that. And Andre Ware, you could tell he's really a fan because he's frustrated like us. A lot of people can relate to that. But I went through some angry calls, and the funny part about this is all of this kind of ties into the Vikings. Mm-hmm. So all of these calls I'm about to play,
really?
The Vikings were playing.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So the first one, this is the first angry announcer. This is the game where Brett Favre was actually on the Vikings. He's playing the Saints. And all they needed was a field goal.
Oh, was this the playoff game?
Yeah, and this happened.
I think this was the playoff game.
Brett Favre goes back to pass. He pumps. Now he fires over the middle. Intercepted. I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. It was intercepted by Tracy Porter.
Yeah.
Near side to the 40. And John Sullivan runs him down at the 47-yard line. You've got to be kidding me. I can't believe what I just saw. But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that game.
I respect that so much.
I remember watching that.
I respect that so much because one of the things I absolutely despise, and this is me just being a little bit of a little bit of a jerk in some ways, I hate the announcers that yell into the microphone because everybody's like, oh, look at them getting excited. I'm like, no, look at them being unprofessional, man. Always, you're just making loud noises into the microphone. Now it's all clipping and stuff. Keep your voice, you know, measured. You can get louder. You can get frustrated. And that man right there.
He was frustrated.
He was frustrated, he did not clip.
I like how you said 56-yard field goal. Like, it's just nothing. Yeah. Like, it's a 20-yard field goal.
You said Kaimi back there?
Yeah, but you could hear the veins bursting on his forehead. You could actually hear them swelling on his forehead.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
That's so good.
He was so mad.
He was sick. He was heated.
Angry announcer number two. This was the Vikings again. This was, I think this play actually knocked them out of the playoffs.
Okay.
So they was playing the Cardinals, and McCown threw a game-winning touchdown, and this is how it sounded.
Here it is. The season's on the line. Two receivers left and right. McCown takes the
the snap. He steps up. He's all by himself. Fires into the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! No! No! The Cardinals have knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs.
I respect him. I respect him, man. If you call it, the other team is doing something good. Your team is not necessarily. He gave it that same energy.
No.
He gave it that same energy. He did have to throw some no's in there. It sounded like, what was it? Like Michael Scott.
From, yeah. No.
Angry announcer number three. Now, this one, this is the Vikings again, man. And I want to say this was a couple years ago because this one was with pretty much this current Vikings team. It was Cousins and Jefferson and all that. And the Vikings just went in on the refs. And they went in on Stephon Gilmore, who was playing for the Colts because he took a shot at Justin Jefferson.
This referee called officiating his first Viking game, Trey Blake. I hope you never come back again. Empty snap, another four-man rush. Throws left to Jefferson, who's blasted by Stephon Gilmore, who should be thrown out of the game. Stephon Gilmore should be thrown out of the game for that hit. And he's lucky that somebody doesn't come off the sideline and whoop his butt.
Wow.
Hey, yo.
I'll come down from the booth.
Also, just saying whoop his butt in that tenor is hilarious.
Yeah, and whoop his butt.
It's something about the Vikings, man, that just bring the announcement, like the angry announcers out, man.
I think you're onto something here.
I mean,
man.
That franchise has had a lot of sadness over a long period of time.
Yeah. Good gracious.
Here's number four. All right. At this point, this is the Vikings
There's
game
still
again.
More.
At this point, I feel like they just playing Madden.
Let Jefferson get up.
That's a flag. They threw the flag. Well done. Well done. Well done, you cheaters.
Wow.
They playing the video game at this point.
Accusations of cheating in the game.
Let Jefferson get up.
That's a flag. They threw the flag. Well done. Well done. Well done, you cheaters. Go ahead and keep cheating.
That sounds like me playing Madden.
That's right.
I was just going to say, that sounds like cheating. My two sons when they were playing Madden.
Game cheating.
Oh, you cheating.
You see me push the button? Yeah, you cheating.
I threw it the circle.
Yeah.
Like, they cheating.
Game cheating, bro. Go ahead, hit reset. Nah, we not finishing this game. Game cheating.
Man, they would get into some knockdown dragouts, my two boys, man.
That's how it's supposed to be played.
Yeah.
That's how it's supposed to be. That's incredible. And he was clapping, too. Clapping it, man.
Yeah,
he was in
it. Little Bronx cheer, whatever they call it.
He forgot what he was doing.
That's a flag. Hey, I enjoy that, man. It might not be the most professional broadcast, but like on this side, I enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure.
Where I can sit there and laugh.
The moments are great, and I think also the fans appreciate it.
It's entertaining.
And, like, obviously, a broadcaster that can be professional is cool, but there's something visceral about a broadcaster that feels like the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to ask y'all a question. So as a kid, did you ever want to go somewhere and your parents said, nah, I'm not driving you there?
Oh, yeah.
What did you do in that moment? Did you just try to walk there, try to catch a bus or get a ride from somebody else? What did y'all do in that moment?
I think I know where you're going with this. So I'm going to say up front, I wasn't this young. I was like 14 or 15. And I was late for my baseball game. I was playing a baseball game, and I borrowed my brother's motorcycle and rode my in my baseball uniform. Rode my brother's motorcycle to the game,
like an actual motorcycle,
actual motorcycle.
When you say borrowed, did he know it was being borrowed?
No.
Okay, so you stole it. Gotcha. All right. That is very little brother energy. I just borrowed it. No, you didn't. You stole it. There's a difference.
My mom didn't know how to drive. And my dad wasn't home yet, neither was my big brother, whose motorcycle it was, because, you know, that was his weekend kind of fun thing. So I just hopped on that motorcycle, drove to the baseball game.
Sometimes you got
to
get somewhere.
Well, I think you and this 8-year-old from Ohio might have a lot in common, because she had to go to Target, and she decided to take the keys.
Here's the first look at dash cam footage of her on the road. She's not that good. Police say she drove about 25 minutes before making it into the Target parking lot.
Minutes.
I know. It was early enough, it looks like, that there weren't a lot of
people
on the road.
She's
weaving in and out of lanes. She did admit she struck a mailbox during the ride. I mean, thank goodness it was just a mailbox. Target employees say she spent $400, Greg, shopping around, checked out. She also made a stop at Starbucks to get a Frappuccino.
That little girl's going places.
Yeah, apparently that's where the cops found her enjoying a Frappuccino.
Yeah.
She went on her little
$400.
Yeah, that was the thing.
That's when I she's going that, places that one.
I was like, where'd she get $400 from?
That sounded like an episode of Home Alone, man.
They did exactly what it was.
I was like, did she also steal her parents' credit card? Yeah. That's
see, now,
wild.
I wasn't eight. and I had driven the motorcycle before. My brother had let me try it around the block a couple of times.
14, 15, that's kind of.
That's different.
Yeah.
Eight-year-old spending $400 for a Frappuccino and other stuff at Target?
Now, you got some grandkids.
Yes, I do.
What would you do if something like that happened?
I would go berserk on little Natalie. Yeah.
Just decided to take the car. She's 8 years old. She tall enough to drive a doggone car. But if she take a car and drive, like, what do you do as a parent?
Well, I'm glad you said as a parent, because as a grandparent, I could never yell at Natalie. So,
this is why y'all the problem. This is why y'all the problem.
I would tell her do better next time. But as a parent, you go nuts. You go nuts on them.
Yeah, I was like, oh, she's just living in the long legacy of was it Latarian Milton?
Yeah.
You remember that kid that stole his grandma's car? And then he went and ultimately hit a car later. He him and his friend.
I'm trying to remember. That sounds familiar, but I don't got that one.
I like to do bad things.
Oh,
it's fun to do hood rat things with my. I like to do hood rat things with my friend. Yeah, man. Yeah. As soon as I saw this, I was like, oh man, she just like him for real. Except she did it. It seemed like she did it in the suburbs because she went and go.
And
she
that was
to,
here, right?
She went. To,
that was in Ohio.
Ohio.
That was in Ohio. Okay. It had to be early in the morning because it wasn't really nobody on the road. Roads, mm-hmm. Thank goodness, but man, I think I would have got my ass whooped just off of the $400 alone.
Yeah.
Correct.
What 8-year old has $400?
Someone who has access to their mom's purse,
and it could have been a credit card because the cashier would have like, "You're 8 years old. This ain't your credit." You know what I mean?
I think still at the end of the day, I would have still had to make a call like, "Hey, this 8-year old got $400.
Hold on, I just had a thought. How she spent $400? What was she buying?
That's what it is.
Like, I didn't even think about that because it wasn't groceries. She did not get responsible all of a sudden. It was like, let me go fill up the fridge. Like, nah, she was buying nonsense, wasn't she?
And she got her Frappuccino, so she knew what she was doing.
It's fun to go to do hood rat things with your friends.
It's been a while on that one. I'd forgotten about
16
that.
Years, in fact.
Wow.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah, that makes you feel old.
Wow.
So there you go. Figgy's mixtape. announcers in child car theft. That's what you can expect. 1:20 p.m. every weekday here in the loop. Appreciate you, Fig. That was a delight. Some people already were talking about that they needed that laugh after a real disappointing Texans loss 34-7 that happened yesterday that was heard here on Sports Radio 610. And coming up next, did this team eat the rat poison? That is the question that we're asking. We'll discuss it next.
Thank you, Figgy.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, one more time on this Reaction Monday brought to you by Shoppers John Deere. The Texans fall 34-7 yesterday in Minneapolis. And we have to ask, did they eat the rat poison? Did they eat the cheese? As Nick Saban would obviously always point to when it comes to teams. Don't listen to the outside noise. Don't smell your own stuff. Obviously, someone asked earlier, I think on the YouTube, asked what's the latest on Tank. I'm not sure that we'll have a good idea on that unless D'Amico Ryan says something about that. He'll talk to the Assemble Media at 2:30, and you'll hear that, I'm sure, or at least get news from that. When it comes to our guys, Clint and Ron, when they take over here shortly. In fact, T. Mill might have, he might be getting the blues here shortly because he traveled to this game. And apparently the last three road games that he has traveled to for the Texans, they have lost.
Well, that's a message.
So he might get the blues here.
Man,
so
I don't know why he brought that up, man.
Yeah, man.
I wouldn't have said nothing.
My condolences to him because I feel like Clint and Ron going to be on his keister today. But did the Texans eat the rat poison? And the reason why I ask this is there's a couple of things in post game that you have obviously could have heard here. Sports Radio 610, Clint and Sean were both handling that duty as they always do so well. And first of all, they were able to sit down or talk with Cam Akers after the game. Obviously, he was the one man who crossed the goal line for the Texans, accounted for six of those 7 points. Obviously, Kaimi had the extra point. They asked him in the course of this game. And he mentioned he said something interesting in the course of his answer. I don't remember exactly what the question was, but listen closely to the answer. And he kind of speaks to the mentality of this team in some ways.
As a team, you know what I mean? I don't think it's a problem. I just think we're too comfortable as a team sometimes. And knowing how good we are, knowing how much talent we have, knowing how the coaches, how they dial things up, I think we get too comfortable sometimes. And I don't think we should. Teams are trying to – we're the team that people want to beat, you know. So being comfortable, that's not acceptable. You know what I mean? We have to come out every week, every game, and with the same mindset and same attitude, regardless of who we're playing, regardless of, you know, what the situation is. Being comfortable, that's not acceptable.
You know, when you brought this up before the show, and then we've talked about it here and there during breaks and stuff, you know, so we brought it on air.
He said it. Like, because my first inclination was, nah, come on. I mean, you know, D'Amico, how many times have we heard D'Amico say, yeah, we're just the next play, you know, and all this other stuff, and trying to refocus his guys.
Well, he said it a lot, but Cam Akers flat out said, yeah, we're too comfortable.
And that is a Cam Akers who been around the league a little bit. He's played in three places, obviously. Played for the Rams, played for those Minnesota Vikings last season, and now with the Texans. And he's won a Super Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, for whatever that's worth, he has seen the process of going deep and playing high-level football in this league. And that was one of his assessments about the way that this goes. If you'll allow me to throw one more thing at you, C.J. Stroud, quarterback of this team, leader on this team, he was asked about, you know, he talked about what they were expecting the Vikings to do to this team versus what actually happened in the course of that game.
I mean, they kind of did exactly what we thought. Played a lot of too high, a lot of taking away our passing game, and then they would either blitz the edge and try to stop the run on a certain down. So, I mean, they did a lot of things that we thought we were doing. We just, you know, weren't moving quick enough. We weren't executing. We weren't playing hard enough. And, you know, it starts with me. So, just got to be better. I mean, it's, you know, something that I feel like it can be fixed, so it's nothing to hang our heads down about, but, you know, definitely can and will be better.
So the reason why these two things, right, you heard, weren't playing hard enough in the course of that answer for C.J. Stroud and, of course, got too comfortable for Cam Akers. Are these just kind of some of the football colloquialisms that will happen? You know, some of the kind of rote things that end up getting thrown out from
sort
time
of crutches
to time. Does this speak to the idea that maybe the Texans got to a place where they smelled themselves a little too much and they ate the rat poison?
Yeah, I think the Cam Akers one was probably the most telling because it sounded more sincere, by the way. It sounded like something he really felt like. And as you pointed out, like he knows what a championship team looks like. And he felt compelled enough to say, nah, we were too you know, complacent with all these things. So it felt real. And if he's saying it, and it's not, and then you decide that it's not just lip service, well, then there was something there. Now that's something that, you know, you heard CJ talk about it, D'Amico talk about it, you know, correctable things. Now that is easily correctable. In fact, it might already be corrected because their eyes are so open on how they went into this game versus, you know, how it ended up.
Yeah, and 832, and I think some other people on the text line, I don't want to forget you, said it's okay that they got to that place as well. They're humans, but how do you respond? And I think that's really the big thing for me.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that CJ kind of expressed. Like, you're kind of happy that it happens this early in the season because it gives them an opportunity to grow and develop with that. And I think that's really ultimately the biggest thing. But it's possible that they did get to a place where they got a little complacent and comfortable. Because, as we mentioned, week one versus the Colts, week two versus the Bears, right? You have both of those games, and in both those instances, it's like, oh, man, there was definitely some things that we could do better, but it's better to try and fix those after a win.
Yeah.
That's cool. Some of those same things came up in week three again. And so that line of logic, even though it remains to be true, it there's a little bit of a question within that. It's like, all right, well, this is cool, man. We won, and we just got to get these things fixed. How much more true does that ring once it's like, okay, those things now came to roost and forced and caused a loss for you? And so I hope that is the ultimate change, is that you did not get to a place where, you know, even if we make some mistakes, we can get some wins. No. You get yourself to a place where these issues, especially penalties on the offensive line and elsewhere, get fixed, because you see the difference in when you're playing a team of a certain caliber, those will keep you from winning.
Well, and I know this is going to shock you, but I think this comes back even to complacency leading up to game one, game two, game three. The complacency of, you know, letting a guy miss training camp. The complacency of this is how we do it. The complacency of we don't, you know, we don't really change. We haven't really changed a whole lot. Like those guys, specifically Kamu Grugier-Hill and all the former Texans, John Gennard, they didn't seem to be too surprised by anything they saw, you know? So is it a complacency of even beyond the players being complacent? Of coaches saying, look, Laramie's going to be a good pass blocker and he may have a false start or two. You know what I'm saying? I think I think it's a thread that maybe D'Amico needs to look at that and Bobby Slowick needs to look at that, because that it was very evident that they weren't surprised by much of what the Texans did. So maybe there's a little complacency from the top. Very evident, obviously, what we've been talking about with the offensive line and specifically Laramie Tunsil. And then Cam Akers flat out said it.
Yeah.
Flat out said it.
And I think that when it comes down to it, it did feel like this team got outcoached both ways that this went, right? In both of those matchups that we were, you know, looking forward to, Flores versus Slowick and O'Connell versus D'Amico Ryans and Matt Burt. Like, it did feel like you looked up and you're like, hey, man, the men in purple got the advantage on both sides. And it feels like whether they were complacent or whatever we want to say, there's a level of examination, self-examination all the way up. And I think I'm glad that you mentioned that all the way up to the coaching element of this that needs to be
done. In what world does a 29-year-old just automatically miss every day at training camp? He was 29.
Who's one?
Laramie.
You're talking Laramie. Oh, Laramie 30 officially now.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, here.
Yeah. Here.
It did. Here it did. It happened.
And last year.
Yeah.
When he was 28.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, listen, man, you know what you're getting from LT. They know what they're getting from LT. My man said, hey, Matt Burke said, don't you start throwing my damn name in now.
Well, I've been trying to do better about throwing Matt Burke in.
I've been trying to do better. It's been D'Amico defense all the time. Yeah. All them damn sacks, all that stuff last week. It all was D'Amico's defense. Now we get our ass kicked. Now it's Matt Burke. That said, no, don't you start adding my damn name into this now. No, it's D'Amico defense. Yeah. I'm out here just running meat. Well, that was something else there yesterday.
Y'all buying the idea that maybe they took the rat poison in this one?
Oh, no, I don't think buying it. Hell, I think Cam Akers said it in the postgame.
That's what we said with you.
Look, I mean, we talked about it, Reg, before you ever got here. Me and Ron talked about it from the jump, man, and we didn't necessarily try not to address it from a negative angle, but the truth of the matter is this team, the leadership group, was moving in a different way after winning 10 games and winning one playoff game. That offseason, they were moving differently than they were moving the entire first offseason before the 10 wins and the season. The messaging was, we'll do whatever it takes. We'll do whatever coach asks us to do to win games. And then all of a sudden, after last season, guys had a little success. Guys wanted 1,200 yards. Mm-hmm. Guys wanted 100 catches. Guys wanted 10 touchdowns. Guys are on the radio row over there talking smack like they was Tom Brady,
yeah,
right? Which, again, yeah, nothing wrong. Do what you want to do, but you got to be ready to back it up. And so I think, to your question, I don't think there's any doubt that they was feeling themselves. You listen to what Cam Akers said. You look at that, the fact that we're having the conversation. Yeah, I think it's safe to say they was feeling themselves a bit.
I think there's definitely a conversation there, but I think there's also the conversation that maybe some don't want to have. Like, yeah, I can understand rat poison, but that was 34-7.
Yeah.
That was an ass kicking.
Yeah.
That was more than just rat poisoning. And then when you combine, it's not like they have been beating the brakes off these other two bad teams before. No, that is a question. I mean, we got to watch the two teams they beat before play each other. I mean, it could have been Mick Twanam Bay to watch that. I wouldn't want to sit there and have to watch the Colts and Bears the rest of my life. That was rough.
And the drive is live. It's a Reaction Monday.
Hey!
Hold on now. What happened?
False start on Clint Sterner in the drive.
Hold on now.
That's right.
I wanted to bust in here about 1:49 and start this thing in honor of the great Laramie.
Sorry about that, Laramie. I stole it from you right
That's
there.
That's hilarious. These guys are going to break down all those things that we need to talk about after a 34-7 loss. But right now, you're listening to KILT, KILT 2, and KILT HD 2 in Odyssey Sports Station. And it might be T-Mill's fault. But the drive is live.
Nah, man. It was the false start's fault.
Hey, hold on, man.
It's hard to do your job when I jump off and mess the rhythm up.
Yeah, exactly.